Welcome to the Everyday Bowhunter. I'm your host, Mike Manley, retired Green Beret turned bowhunter, joined by my brother, Dan Zima. We're here to share tips, stories, and talk gear, all from our unique points of view. Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned bowhunter, I think you're going to like it. So let's go. All right, Dan, here we are, episode 20. Feels like a milestone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy, 20.
Yeah, that's good. We're getting there. Considering, I think our anniversary for doing this podcast is in July. Did we start in July? I think it was late June or early July when we started this.
All right. I can't remember, but.
So we're closing in on a year here. We're getting close.
Well, there's 26 weeks in a year. We try to do it bi-weekly. Obviously, we missed that by a mile. But
yeah, but we'll still be in the 20s, so that's pretty good for a year. So we'll be able to knock out a few here before we hit our
anniversary. What did I say? There's 26
weeks.
26 half-week, or bi-weekly.
Yes, by doing it every 2 weeks.
I'm thinking of it like my paycheck. I get paid 26. You know what I mean.
Whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So this past weekend, Dan and I, as we talked about, this spring gobbler opened up here in Pennsylvania. We went up to our camp with our family and our dad and Dan's buddy, Jevin, and we had a blast. The weather did not cooperate with us too much.
It wasn't beautiful. And if anybody's around where we hunt, you know that. It wasn't great. It was very rainy.
Very rainy. Just like it's
cold.
Man, yeah, it was cold. We went out. It was actually funny because I was getting my stuff on and Dan's like, "You're not going to need that jacket very long. It's going to warm up out here."
And it never did.
Nope.
It actually got worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was about 50 degrees when I came out of the woods.
Imagine that. The weatherman was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It did not warm up at all. So anyway, I started off, I got all my stuff together. I went out and I used a shotgun. I took my shotgun out. I did not take my bow. I do plan on taking my bow here and hunting next week. Not this upcoming weekend, but the weekend after. I'm taking some days to try to go out and get some more turkey hunting in. And I am going to take my bow for that. Because I did finally get to shoot my bow quite a bit. Feel real confident with that.
Nice.
But that's another story. So anyway, I went out. I had two different spots I was really focused on because of history with turkeys, being in that area, seeing them a lot, and one place that we call the Lead Line. Mm-hmm. And another place that we call Shale Pit.
I was actually surprised to see you there when I came back through at the Lead Line.
Oh, really?
Because you had never said you were going to go there.
When I was driving up.
And I was like, he's in a good spot.
Well, habitually, there's always been good turkey hunting there in that area.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
But the problem is, there's always been a ton of people there that you have to, then I don't want to go up in somebody else's hunt, you know, in that area. So always seems to be somebody there when we get there.
Yeah.
And that's why I haven't hunted it.
Right.
Well, I got there, nobody there.
Unbelievable that you had it, because it's notorious for turkey, and you had it to yourself.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But the problem was, it's so, with that rain, right, it wasn't terrible. I was under the canopy, but it's rained so much here that when I first got in there, sat down, had a really good spot, little opening in front of me for good shooting lanes. Mm-hmm. Felt great about the spot, but it had really thickened up fast because of all the rain we have. It's really green out there right now.
It happened fast.
Yeah, and with that rain coming down and hitting that canopy, when you start calling, I felt like my calling was going nowhere. I felt like I needed to have a bullhorn mm-hmm. so the turkey could even hear me. If they weren't within 100 yards of me right there, they probably weren't going to hear me at all.
Well, they heard. They have amazing ears. So.
But I moved into the wood line a little bit from where I was and got hit a little bit more open area, just trying to give myself and my calling a little bit more reach. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. I called intermittently. I wait 15 minutes, try not to overdo it. Just do some really, chirps,
it's an early season. You don't want to overdo it.
Don't want to overdo it. Yeah. Trying to keep my stuff in check and not get crazy on it. And one thing that came out in a Pennsylvania Outdoor magazine, it said that not to expect a lot of calling back and that they might surprise you and end up just walking up on you without making a sound. So I was trying to be really still and attentive around me, looking, staying and trying not to move too early because that could happen and try not to be too aggressive and still nothing. Yeah. So I moved around a little bit more in there and said, you know what, I'm gonna hit another spot where I saw turkey last year.
Yeah.
And some gobblers. And so I went there, did the same thing, got up in what I thought was a pretty good spot with some good shooting lanes, just like before, and a little bit more open air. It's a little bit more open up there. Mm-hmm. You get above the shale pit there. And called, you know, just started like it did before, real easy, and I just felt like I was getting nowhere with it, and said, oh, you know what, with the rain beating down, I didn't hear a shot all morning. All morning. In fact, Jevin said he heard it, but it was towards town more.
Okay.
But I didn't hear anything. Did you hear any shots?
I did not hear one shot. And, you know, this is tribute
to... never seems to happen.
This is early in... Okay, so if it's really warm and buggy, first light, they're going to be more vocal. It's going to be on, you know. This cold, rainy... It was not ideal for turkey hunting.
Well, probably keeps them bundled up in the tree more.
Right. I
up in the roost.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say. I think that, you know, when it's colder like that and wet, I think they roost a little bit longer and they're staying quiet, so you're not locating them. You're, you know, they're more inclined to just keep shut, you know, keep their mouth shut and not get shot, unfortunately for us. So, but, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that... That being to going, basically going back to camp, and I was going to go over into the area right next to camp, but Jevin had already done that, so I didn't want to go over there and mess up his hunt.
Right, right.
So my hunt, I think by, what was that, by 10 o'clock I was done.
Yeah.
So we started early. We were up by 4:45, but really didn't get anywhere with that.
Yeah, and it took a little bit longer for it to get light out because of how overcast it was, where, you know, on a sunny day, it would have been light a lot earlier, but... At any rate, it is what it is.
Yeah. Luckily, I had good gear on, and the rain didn't bother me, but the turkeys didn't bother me either.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, that new Sitka coat worked pretty good for rain for me. It was just kind of everything else. Like
that was the Traverse hoodie.
Yes, Traverse hoodie.
That had to be
and
warm, too.
I was a little peeved that I bought it, thinking it was going to be like the Traverse pants.
Mm-hmm.
Not even close. So it's more kind of thickness-wise, more along the lines of the... Oh my gosh. What do I have?
The Equinox.
The Equinox hoodie.
Not the Equinox Guard.
No, that's different.
The straight Equinox, which they don't make anymore.
Right, which I think this is a little bit more windproof, a little bit more rainproof. I think it's better. But that being said, I was like, okay, I bought this thinking it was going to be like the Traverse hoodie, Traverse pants, and they're not, and I wanted to have them to go together. I should have did my homework. I didn't do that. Thankfully, I assumed
it was going to be something to match up with it, too, but, you know.
Thankfully, I had it, because it was cold, and I was moving at great speeds. And what I mean by that is, so I got my e-bike that we talked about on the last podcast.
And sealed the deal.
I sealed the deal, and it went on its maiden voyage, and I'll tell you what, it's fun. So, I rode a total of, I think, about 5 miles, but... I got out to where the goal was to go. I got out there, and the path kind of goes along the top of the ridge of the mountain there, and it sits back a little bit. So I would go about 100 yards, shut it down, and I'd call. I'd sit there and listen for a little bit, go about another 100 yards, all while staying on the bike. And it's so you got tire tracks on either side, grass in the middle. I'd kind of stay in the middle so it would be dampen my noise a little bit, be quieter. But my thought process was, you know, if they roosted low and they're going to be feeding up, I'm kind of back out of the way, but my sound's going to carry and I'm going to hear that coming up over. I did that. Obviously, I didn't hear anything because this story would be a lot better if I did. But I rode that out like that, and I came back and then went out to another opening that we had scouted. And there's like a water hole. I got stuck in the mud, and I went past the water hole and went out to the field. But and I, yeah, tore up my nice boots. But I'll tell you what a tool to have in your toolbox for hunting. It is everything that I thought. And more. I think I'm in love. It's awesome. I'm not going to lie. It is such a tool. I just said.
I'm probably going to execute and buy the same exact bike because it meets Pennsylvania standards.
Yeah.
And everything else I've looked at has just a little bit more speed to it.
Yeah, yeah.
High-end speed, because you have to max out at 20 miles an hour.
Right.
And the one thing I was concerned with that I didn't want to jump on it until I heard if Dan was okay with it was he went up a pretty sizable incline to get to the plateau that he was on just and he was just talking about.
Yeah.
And how did that work on that incline with the bike?
Okay, so...
Talk about the specs of the bike real quick.
Okay, so it's 750 watt max.
Mm-hmm.
It's
an Amazon special.
Yeah, it's an APOS. A2.
AIPAS.
Yeah, A2. Yeah, 750 watt. It's the fat tire, you know, it 20 mile an hour has, what is
20 inch wheels.
20 inch wheels, the four levels, I think, of pedal assist, four different modes of pedal assist, which... there's a learning curve. I will just say that there's times where if you even touch your pedals, it just kind of starts taking off on you. And you got to know which mode to be in that it doesn't do that. It folds up. It very nice. That is kind of one of my more favorite parts about it because I folded it up and I was able to keep my tarp down or my katana cover up, you know, tight. And have everything packed in there with all that rain,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was nice. And I still got to get my cooler,
so
my sleeping bag, like 63 pounds, I believe.
63 pounds?
Yeah.
And
it's very tolerable when it's packed up, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. it's all condensed and you're just...
But you felt like with the pedal assist going up a pretty good incline, that worked pretty well?
There was a couple almost like, you know what I mean? Moments where it really kind of started dogging out on me and I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And I looked up the mountain and went, oh shit. But I just dropped gear. It has 7-speed Shimano gears on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just dropped gears, got into that, you know, mountain bike easy mode, so to speak. And boop, the pedal assist really kicked it. You know,
that's the thing that I'm really looking at when you're saying, okay, you have pedal assist, but then you also have, and you have straight up electric, but then you also have a regular geared
yes.
Shimano 7-speed
yeah.
thing on there where you have to downshift to be able to pedal easier going up a hill. It's about managing all that and learning how it works all together.
That's just it. And then on top of that, Mike, I haven't been on a bike in 15 years.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
I didn't realize it was
no, dude. I never was really into mountain bikes. I always rode BMX.
Yeah.
You know, I was like more of the BMX skateboarder, you know, motocross guy. And that's what broke my body in half.
We ride bikes all the time. But the one feature that I saw that really stood out to me as important was that it's a step through because of putting gear on the rack in the back of it and mm-hmm. not having to step over that after you pack that.
Right.
You can just step through and get on the bike without having to swing your leg over the top of it.
That's just it. Kind of like what I was saying about breaking my body in half. So back in, what was that, 2003, I was, you know, hitting some jumps, motocross on a quad. Me and cousin raced nationally, and I thought I could be like him. Obviously, I'm not. We're two totally different people. He had abilities that I definitely didn't have. And I crashed my brains out, and I shattered my pelvis and messed myself up pretty good. Well, I can't kick my leg up over, like a mountain bike, let's say, up over the seat. And especially if you got on that rack, a bag, and now you're kicking up higher.
That's
so
what I'm saying, yeah.
I wanted that step through. And I'll tell you what, if you got I had a backpack on with my shotgun, you know, it's meant for a gun.
Mm-hmm.
I had that on me. And just being able to step through, hop on, and go, it is so convenient. I fell in love. I was like a kid in a candy store. I literally... If I would have had my GoPro on and it would have been facing me, it would have probably looked like, you know what I mean? I was so happy. I was smiling from ear to ear. I actually rode past two guys that were walking up the path out to go out the mountain. And I mean, about 13, 14 mile an hour flew by them. And later on, when I came back, they were at the parking area and they kind of approached me and wanted to know about the bike. And they're like, the younger brother, it was two brothers, and the younger brother said, man, when you flew by us, I looked at my brother and was like, that's what we got to have, you know? And they're like, he's like, dude, that's freaking cool.
It gives you so much reach, you know?
And
it's going to be eventually everybody's going to be doing it, you know?
But yeah. And about the...
it's such a tool.
We were talking about in the last podcast about time equality or whatever.
Time equity.
Time equity, sorry. Yep. So where I wanted to park where the gate was locked for archery season. Okay, so that gate was open. But the main gate to head back into this property, which is 2 miles back the other way, that was locked. So I had to start.
That's a lot of distance.
It was a lot of distance. But I made it to the top of the mountain in what felt like no time. Now, I do have to give my bike a break-in period. So the front shocks aren't as soft, the suspension in it, the shocks, they're breaking in. It was a little stiff, and, you know, you start the switchback road. It got a little hairy because I was going a little bit faster than I wanted to go, and, you know, it's loose stone. But I'll tell you what, all in all, great experience. So back to turkey hunting. So I pack it up from there, and I head back, and I go to, if you guys have been listening, where I hit the buck this year, and I wanted to put my cell cam up. So I go up in, I call a little bit, and nothing. So I was like, ah, you know what? I'm going to hang this camera. So I hang it, and I go to link it up, and it won't link up. I pull my phone out, realize I have no cell phone service. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So up the mountain I go, and I go up, and there was a spot that I had seen in rifle season. And so I went up there, put it on a tree, linked right up, and I have not got a picture yet. Yeah, I'm a little disappointed because, you know, all the sign was fresh, but like
they,
I said,
sometimes they only hit that spot once every, it might be 7-10 days. I mean, you just have to say that, you know, and we'll talk about that later about the patterns, but yeah. Sometimes it's like that. It's feast or famine. And this time of year specifically, I have found that on my cameras, I have way less pictures than I do. And all of a sudden, as you get into June, when the does are dropping, you know, end of May, beginning of June, when does are dropping fawns, all of a sudden the camera action goes way up.
Yeah, yeah.
So I moved my camera too.
Yeah.
So I went out. I had a spot where my camera was basically sitting at the top of a mountain where I had a lot of deer action on there. And I think the action I had was largely because of the acorn crop we had and a lot of feed there. Whereas this year, I did not see anything yet, but it's very early.
Yeah, right.
So it's very early. So anyway, I just moved it down the mountain to the next bench down, and I already have pictures. So that was a good move on my part to move that camera.
Of course you did.
I had moved both cameras that I have out, and right after moving them, I had gotten deer on both just because of looking at the active sign. I really am not looking at hunting those particular spots. Well, maybe the one, but the one sitting on it, basically on a stream, or not a stream, but a runoff coming down off the mountain, you know, and that there, they're at that nonstop for water. So that there helped me get an idea of where to inventory what's in the area.
So literally you're using it just a pattern.
Yes.
And so on pattern, do you want to do it?
Yeah. So, right. So one of the questions, what he's segueing into is one of our listener questions, and it's from Jim Knoll, Missouri. Thank you for the question on Instagram. His question was, okay, how do you guys talk about hunting in hill country in the mountains, you know, a lot, because that's what you do. That's what we do.
Yep.
And so what is, you know, how do you pattern deer in the mountains? What patterns do you see consistently that help you hunt those deer in the mountains? So we had talked about this a little bit and stuff. And a couple things. I mean, there's really a lot of different ways to look at patterning deer. I'll give you a couple examples of what led me to some spots, and then Dan will do the same thing. So one of the things that happened to me kind of early on when I was really just coming out of the military and really starting to get an idea and feel for the area, and that even had no idea about deer patterns and stuff, I really had to educate myself, you know, on that. So took my oldest son out rifle hunting last day of rifle season, like we always do.
Yeah.
And our dad put a drive on just for him. And didn't we have, like, I don't know how many it was, 5-6 doe came right at us. He shot one of them. Great job. I missed, which was because I was totally baffled that deer were running at us at that spot. You know the spot I'm talking about.
I do, yeah.
Right next to a lake.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we track the deer, and it probably went 150 yards. But all those other deer that did not get shot, and there was snow on the ground, right? And I kind of saw where they had crossed the road and where they went. Well, what I did then was I said, I'm gonna follow these tracks to see where they naturally went, because they're gonna go where they always go. They know they have their trails, and they're going to go right to their trails. Even if they're taken off course a little bit, they're always going to come back on
familiarity
course for the trails that they're used to running. So I followed that, and what I ended up doing was establishing a spot where in the mornings deer are coming from water. They're actually coming across the road that's there, and they're coming up onto this bench that's not too far from the road. It's maybe maybe 150 yards at most. And then they're running that bench in the morning every single day for the most part at that particular time.
Yeah.
And I end up putting a lock-on stand in that area, and almost like clockwork, there was something coming down through there. In fact, our dad got his deer basically in that spot last year.
Yeah.
Because what happens in the doe, those doe are constantly running that, right? So what do you get when the rut hits? Where there's doe, there's buck. And so if they're running there on their patterns every day, there's a good chance that if they're still running that during the rut, that a buck's going to be up there sniffing around.
Now, that pattern could change a little bit going into archery season because of feed patterns. You're losing foliage, this, that, and the other. You know, things change, but
what I think would happen was I think they were going into that thick stuff there right next to the road and bedding in there, because I found beds in there. And so I was assuming that the does were going in there in a group and bedding right off the road there in that thick stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
All right. So for me, you know, patterning deer, it's not as easy as it sounds. I mean, I guess it is. I mean, there is some common sense into it. So deer need certain things. They need cover for bed. They need food, and they need water.
Always.
Okay. So
that's what I said in previous podcasts. Initially scouting it.
Yeah. So utilize that knowledge to pattern deer. So for me, as a young guy, my dad would always say, you know, the hunting pressure around here is pretty high. So they're bedding up on top of the mountain. They got to come back down to drink, you know. And certain areas were closer to our cabin sits right at the edge of Hag. So they're coming down to the fields at night, and they're going to feed in the cornfields and whatnot. Maybe get some of that timothy and, you know, clover and all that good stuff. So patterning them in that aspect closer to the ag fields, you have to put yourself, okay, so if you go out spotting, you might not see them deer out in them fields till 9 o'clock at night. So now you know you got to be higher up till they feed. You got to figure they're just feeding down the mountain. They're just browning, you know what I mean? Going down that mountain. So you got to kind of think about it like that and time it that way. Now, out in the mountain where you don't have that ag, again, you have to have your thick, you have to have your food, and you have to have your water. So for me, I do hunt a spot that is by a larger body of water. And 2 years ago, I was hunting, and I seen, it was rut, but what I saw was on this ridge, I knew that in rut, the deer kind of push up a little bit. They're not necessarily down in the flats of this area as much, unless they're drinking, coming, you know, getting ready to go back to their bedding. But this buck was running doe, and he was running this ridge. So knowing that, I went back and knew where to put myself because I knew where he was running doe. And I ended up putting myself in a pretty good spot, and I got that 8 point. So, yeah, patterning deer, like I said, it's not actually easy, but you do have to use some common sense and use the knowledge of bedding, food, and water to utilize that.
Yes, and part of patterning is also being able to get out there and cut a track, find those tracks, see the direction of movement. Right. A lot of times a deer will only run a certain direction in the morning.
Yeah.
Right. And they'll actually do like a big loop.
Yeah.
You know, they'll go stay low in the morning in the mountains, and then they'll go high to bed a lot of times. Not every time, but most of the time.
Well, you guys all might have heard us actually say, oh, that's a morning hunt or that's an evening hunt. And that is because of that traditional pattern that they run. That's a direct correlation right there. Like, okay, well, they're normally going to bedding. You know, so that's, you know, more of a this hunt, or they're coming from bedding going down for water. Well, that's more of a this hunt. You know, it's like that helps us decide if it's going to be a morning hunt or an evening hunt.
So I found this spot about 5 years ago. I had walked way out on this logging trail, and I found this little field just out in the middle of the woods. Mm-hmm. And I put a trail camera in, and I started seeing the patterns of the deer in there every day.
Right.
Well, what I did then was I branched out, and as I kind of walked back away from hunting that spot, I found these little crossings where deer were moving through the day, and I would actually bump those deer and see them moving. Yeah. What it did was it made me put cameras at other locations in this area, and now I have a really good sense of, okay, deer are probably at water,
right
when it's dark still,
yep.
And then they're moving. I have a spot that now that I have done so much research on with that movement pattern that I've narrowed down that between basically 7 a.m. and 8 a.m., these doe are moving through.
Yeah.
And then when it came time for rut, I put myself in that spot,
yeah,
expecting doe to move through there and then hopefully buck coming through, which I did. I saw two buck there. That's when I saw the biggest buck I've been chasing for the last couple of years,
right,
there. But he decided to come in at 5:30.
Yeah.
And then the 4-point comes through at 8 o'clock when it's laid out.
Yeah.
So you can get a sense of, okay, but you have to get on the ground, right? Get on the ground. Look for those transition areas, mm-hmm, right? Benches where things kind of flatten out a little bit. Deer will put themselves on the edge of that bench where they can see just over it, right? So they can, for that security. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, of course, a lot of times they'll use the wind or whatever too, mm-hmm, but they'll travel those lines like that. So putting yourself in the hill country like that where you can see those benches is a good starting point. Hard transitions between things like mountain laurel and open timber. Look 20, 30 yards on either side of that. Look for those trails and then start following them. Look for tracks. Go in there when it rains. See the tracks in the ground.
Yeah.
See the direction of movement. Say, okay, this took me to water. This is probably where they're coming tonight. Put a trail camera up. Doesn't have to be a cell camera, but just put a regular camera in there. It's not like you're going to hunt that spot necessarily. All you're doing is confirming the pattern,
yeah,
and starting to understand that movement.
Yeah.
Every deer is different and will have a different pattern. There is no thing I can say to you, they're going to be low this time, they're going to be high this time, because sometimes they stay low longer, sometimes they stay high longer, yeah, sometimes they don't even go high until there's hunting pressure.
Right.
Right. So there's all these different factors, but getting yourself in there, getting the game, the one thing I've learned above all else, doe keep their patterns really hard. I have a pair of doe that I literally can walk in and sit there, and at 5 in the evening, they're going to be coming down, mm-hmm, heading down towards water every single night.
And they're like they're like dogs in that aspect. They're like clockwork. It's like, how the hell, they don't wear watches. How the hell they know what time it is?
Shut up. Get off the watch, Dan. Dan's hammering me because I always look at my watch and deer end up seeing me move. Because I do it right when it's in the witching hour, which I shouldn't. And the witching hour being that last hour before dark is the prime time.
Yeah, being nosy gets you in trouble.
Yes.
So, patterns of deer at camp are where we hunt. It's so, okay, how do I word this? It's different from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. It's different because of hunting pressure. It's different for so many reasons. It's different because there's ag fields here. It's different because there's no ag fields out there. It's knowing where you're going to be hunting, mm-hmm, to understand that specific pattern for that area.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, for example, great example. Mm-hmm. So I have really narrowed down that areas that I consider to be specific to, say, early season, you know, because we're on the early season pattern.
Yeah.
Then a little bit later, when you get into when they're really scraping, there's that scrape week time frame.
That pre-rut almost.
Basically, yeah, from October 20th through the end of the month there, mm-hmm, where they kind of fade out and they start not, you know, the scraping activity goes away. That there is time when you find those scraping areas that are habitual,
yeah,
find those community scrapes and get out there. I found this stuff during the season last year. I put myself in there this year. I saw deer, not the deer I wanted, mm-hmm, but at least it confirmed me that what I was doing was correct. It's, yeah, a learning process. It's not, it's very hard to sit here in a, you know, 45-minute podcast.
Yeah.
Go down and explain all the different situations.
But one way to help yourself is go get a trail cam, and where you see deer trails, put that camera. And then, once you retrieve your card, or if it's a cell cam, look at the times of day. That's going to tell you everything you need to know. Mm-hmm. If every Tuesday, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you're seeing them at 6 a.m., you know that, and they're all heading one direction. Guess what that is?
Yeah.
It's a pattern. So,
yeah. And then you can move your camera,
yeah,
especially if you're not getting anything, or if you are, and say, okay, this is the direction of movement. Here's the trail they're going on. Now I want to confirm or deny that they are, in fact, going here the time of day that I think they are.
Yeah.
Right? And then and go from there. One of the things that Dan was talking about, the ag fields that are next to us, we always know that those deer are going to come off those ag fields because that's a heavy food source, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to come off those ag fields and they're going to be heading to bed. That food to bed pattern, that, you know, or bed to food.
I mean, that's
whatever
that's,
time of day it is.
For us, it's an my evening hunt, if I'm hunting close to the ag fields, is I'm going to get up to the upper two-third.
Mm-hmm. Upper one-third.
Upper one. To me, it's from the bottom to there is two-thirds high.
It is, but it's called the upper one-third.
I'm calling it the upper two-thirds. I'm up the upper two-thirds. Damn you. So the upper one-third, for me, that's where I want to be because I'm timing it. As soon as they're going to be bedding up on top of that mountain, they're going to be breaking down over and feeding. And it is like clockwork.
We've seen it.
My dad.
We've seen it time.
Our dad would say to me over and over, right at the last hour, they're going to be coming off top of that mountain. Be ready. And you know what? More times than not, it was like true, you know, true as day.
What has happened a lot, though, too, is because they are so, at different times of the season, they get to be so nocturnal because of the hunting pressure that I've been coming down the tree, just packed my belt, lowered my bow to the ground, whatever, and now the deer decides to come by.
I mean, there's that chance you're never going to catch them in that pattern because of different, you know, scenarios push them into different scenarios. Yeah.
I mean, I hunted, and I still hunt, a spot where I know that there's a large number of doe that come off of these fields, mm-hmm. and they run a stream to go to their bedding.
Yeah.
Right? And they do it pretty habitually. And 9 times out of 10, you're going to see deer in that spot because it's such a travel corridor. And identifying those travel corridors might not necessarily be the spot that you get to hunt, but at least it tells you the time. Like Dan said, the time, the window, how many of them there are, you know, all these different things. And then you can start to say, okay, now I'm getting an understanding of the deer in this area. It's not going to happen instantaneously. It's not overnight. But you got to take the sign that you find and make educated guesses. And those educated guesses, when you start off, are not going to be great. But they build up. I took my son, my oldest boy, Tyler, if you remember this. And he says, we went down. We're kind of hanging out at the lake. It's nearby. And he goes, Dad, look at all, it had rained, so there's all these deer tracks in the mud. And he goes, Dad, let's follow these tracks. So we follow the tracks, and he goes, this is Deer Vegas. Well, we end up calling it Hangover Hollow.
Yeah.
Being that it's a short walk, and if you had a hangover,
it's real easy to get to.
It's a great place to go. And that's how that was born, because he noticed the pattern. We went in there, confirmed, hunted it, and now everybody could see that that is a thoroughfare for deer as well.
And you have a spot like Vincent. Sorry.
Somebody was
a little excited upstairs. We have a spot that we call Vincent, and every morning, it's like clockwork how these deer just come right across you. They're coming down, and they're kind of dog-legging, heading out towards the power line there. Mm-hmm. And it's so up behind where you would hunt, you're hunting, is bedding. It's the thick. Mm-hmm. And they're coming out of that.
It's
super thick. And they're, what's crazy is it's kind of opposite of what you would think. You would think they'd be coming the other way in the morning heading to bedding, but they're actually coming out of the bedding area and walking across you. And it's like there's a little grass field. They can get some good grass. They can, you know, it's...
That's where I got my buck a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Because he was following the doe in there in the rut. And
that was 3 years ago now already.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Yeah. But anyway, Yeah, so all those things, I mean, there's so many things, but the first thing is, you know, I say always is, like Dan said, look at your maps and stuff, look at, you know, eScout, say, okay, where's water, where's possible food? And if you're in a real, you know, heavy wooded mountain area, that can be very difficult to find. You have to look for those mass crops like acorns and stuff, and you're not necessarily going to find them till you're getting on midway through summer when you start seeing that stuff up in the trees, and you can see the you know, some early drops and stuff of acorns. They, you know, acorns is a huge part of a deer's diet in your woods, in your hill country and stuff, your oaks. And then you look at your beech trees and all these different things that they can feed on. And if you find a good batch of acorns in an area where there's none other producing trees around, I'm thinking about hunting that spot.
Yeah. That, and again, back to get yourself a camera. And it doesn't have to be an expensive one. All you got to do is go get a cheap model. Literally, what you're doing is just going for that timestamp on there. So you're getting that clockwork of what they're doing, hence the pattern.
Yes, and during the season, I actually, you know, talk about the 80-20 rule.
Yeah.
Right? 80% of your time scouting, 20% of your time hunting. I have spent time just sitting and observing an area, putting my binos up, and just seeing if I can see what I expect to happen with deer or if I don't. So it's spending time like that, actively scouting for the hottest deer sign you can find, which is a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, yeah. I just look for the cattle path.
Yeah.
That's what I call it, doe paths. I just look for them. I mean, we had talked about the slides in other episodes. I look for that because, again, I would rather sit there and see 8 doe go by than not see anything, because those 8 doe, what comes next in rut? And that's the big, you know, a buck's going to be following.
Yeah, and that's a great thing. That's a great segue into saying, okay, when you have doe, why are you scouting doe? Why would you even pay attention to doe for buck? Well,
because obvious. I live for rut, and where there's doe, there's buck.
But even before rut, when we talk about scraping activity, when we talk about rub lines, a lot of times just off where doe are bedding, that's where these bucks are going to lay down their sign. They're going to put their rub lines. They're letting that's using that as a communication tool with the does, letting them know they're ready, and then they're waiting for the does to be ready. And they start way earlier, obviously, than the does, and they drop this sign. So you can see those rub lines. Yeah. When you see those scrapes, you know that it's probably not too far away from potential doe bedding. So if you have doe trails coming through areas like that, setting yourself up in that area or scouting that area is probably not a bad idea to establish those patterns for that.
I think I just came up with something. So follow along for this ride. So I'm going to call something doe adjacent.
Doe adjacent.
Okay, so you have your doe bedding. The buck are going to be bedding doe adjacent from that.
They do.
And I just came up with a new term. Sorry.
Or the buck is going to be bedding adjacent to the doe bedding.
No, it's doe adjacent. Because they know that there's a hot doe, and they want to keep their nose on that and be within that area, you know.
Even when they know where doe are bedding and they're not quite ready, they're waiting for that to happen. So as you get into that that time frame there, right before the actual rut, buck will bed just off of doe bedding because they're monitoring the doe activity. So if you find doe bedding, in which you're going to find circles of beds, you know, even if it's like 2 doe, they're going to be close together, and it's not necessarily going to be in thick stuff. It's not going to be hidden behind stuff. A lot of times they'll just bed out in the open, whatever.
Oh, I see that a lot, actually. Up on the upper one-third, is you'll see a bunch of beds together, like right on the side, right before the very top of that bench. They're laying right on that side looking. That's a lot of doe beds.
So, and a lot of times they'll even be in a circle, so they have that 360 degree security.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And when you find those beds and you find a bunch of them, 9 times out of 10, that's not buck. That's doe.
No.
But it gives you a good idea as to what the possible patterns could be based on the trails coming into that doe bedding and out of it.
Where there's doe.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things. You talk about clear cuts. You talk about all these different ways to get in and scout and find these things. You know, there's only a couple places that they're going to be, and then the travel routes in between them.
Yeah.
Right? Bedding, food, water, travel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
the fun part's figuring all this out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, for like me and you, we have spent years being in the woods in a certain area, knowing what they're doing. So we kind of, it's tradition or historical things that happen there in that aspect. But that's the fun part of hunting. Hunting's not all about killing. Hunting's about being out there and seeing this and witnessing it and having that like light bulb moment where you go, oh my gosh, I think I know what's happening here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's what's cool. It's like, how do you say that? You're like verifying your own thoughts. You know what I mean? Like it's all coming together and you're, I was like, I love it when a plan comes together, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. So there's a podcast I listened to. The guy was talking about this very same subject. He said, I live for historical data. He said, my Onyx is just so crowded with data from the area I've been hunting. He said, it took me 5 years to narrow down some of the bedding and the food patterns in the area, yeah. right? And then when I did that, I was able to go in and kill the biggest buck of my life. It wasn't year one.
Right.
It wasn't year three. It was year five
yeah.
in that area. I killed deer out in other areas, but for this one particular area, it was so tough because of winds and different thermals and stuff, yeah, which we deal with in the mountains all the time. That's a big obstacle. But it took him a long time to really dig into the habitat, mm-hmm. the patterns in that area.
Yeah.
So it's not overnight. Don't expect to say you go out one season and you don't really find what you're looking for. You're not happy with that. Guess what? That's a successful season.
I've been hunting the same.
You learned a lot and you just don't realize it yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been hunting the same area since I was a kid. And right now I'm obsessed with this new spot. Do you know why? Because I don't know exactly what they're doing, and it drives me nuts. I need to be there to understand it. Like, they're coming across, was that just a one-time thing? Or it's like, I can't sleep at night not knowing what these deer are doing. And that's why I'm obsessed with it. And that's the fun part. And every season you're going to stumble into a new area or a new spot.
I'm talking about Mossy Oak.
Yes. And I'm getting more and more excited about it. It's really cool.
That particular area, the first thing that led me to even looking at that spot was because my wife and I followed tracks when the snow in February.
Right.
Right. With our dog.
Yeah.
Right. And we found doe bedding with hair in it and everything.
Yeah.
And we felt like we must have just scared them out. It was three beds close together in the snow. And it was on this point that was kind of a spot that we literally ignored all the time.
Well, everybody does.
Everybody
ignores it. That's what's great about
this. Because it's not an easy spot to just walk up into. It's kind of like, and it's kind of like a little land, a terrain feature that's like, oh, I got to get around this to go here.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, as soon as you walk in, it's kind of soupy a little bit, swampy. And then like it almost pushes you to a different spot to get around that. But what that did is pushed me to this specific spot to get away from that mud. I got away from that mud and started going up, and like I'm almost going immediately from off the road,
mm-hmm.
like straight up, mm-hmm. like and before the mossy trail.
Yeah,
I'm actually on the other side of that.
Okay,
and it's, man, I'm literally or figuratively, whatever it is, I'm obsessed with it. Yeah. Right now, I can't get enough of it.
I mean, we followed deer, singular deer tracks up there to basically that area you're talking about, yes. in the snow.
Yeah.
And there was a spot where the deer had been against. You could see its paws. Yeah, paws. It's hey, they got paws now.
You were thinking about the dog.
Yeah, against the tree where you saw it rubbed its body all against the tree, and the tree was all worn down where that, and their hair in the tree was just kind of scratching itself or whatever, and said, I'm thinking this is a buck. It's probably the buck you shot at. But anyway, but so, I mean, all these little things, you know, you got to, you know, memory bank it. And I think using something like, I don't care what mobile app you use. We use Onyx. It's not like we're saying that's the best one. I haven't tested a bunch of other ones.
Hunt Stand's great. I actually, before I subscribe, because Onyx had a deal, and that was the only reason I got that. They were running a special. That's why I did that and stopped using the Hunt Stand. Hunt Stand's great. It is.
I did look at that a little bit. I tried to use Spartan Forge, but I think the user interface on that is not well organized, so it's been a while since I used
it. Yeah, it could be better
now.
Yeah.
It's been well over a year and a half or whatever since I even touched it, but I was like, where do I go for this? And then I went to their website and there wasn't tutorial. And I was just like, okay, I'm done.
And you know what, Mike? There's certain things I really like better about Hunt Stand because it shows you your wind cone and this and that. But there's things that I like about ONX better. I like ONX that when I link my phone to my truck, you could pull it up on your maps in your truck. Yes. Your ONX works right on your screen in your vehicle.
I just did it on Saturday when I was going out there to find my camera. I had it waypoint on ONX, and I followed it on the screen on my car out this dirt road to this spot because it's just everything looks the same out there. You have to really be able to navigate. You can navigate with it, like you said, in your car. That's great.
And, because I haven't used Hunt Stand in that aspect, I don't know if you can. I don't think you can. But I do like both of them virtually equally. There's things about one that I like more than the other. There's one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can't knock either of those. Those are the only two I tried. I don't have anything to say about any of those ones. I don't want to comment on something I don't know.
But the point here is, when you go out there and you find sign, or you have a trail camera and you see deer, mark that on your app, whatever app you're using. Yeah.
Mark it on there. You can even use Google Maps.
Mark it on there, and then you will see a pattern start.
Yeah.
So that's a outstanding way of getting up there. Okay, I have rubs here, whatever. You might find that some stuff is haphazard because a buck will go all over the place sometimes and just rub everything. When it's a young buck, will just rub all over the place sometimes. But even with that, you'll be able to see the forest through the trees and say, okay, that's a mess there. That really doesn't make sense. But the rest of this is a big old circle here. Or whatever that pattern is.
No, that's a great point about following your map, because you can literally or figuratively.
Literally
see the pattern.
Yes.
Through your
Yeah. So I mean that's a way to go in. Okay, I have a trail here. You can get on a deer trail right now. A place that you see that there's slides. We call them slides coming down off the mountain. Right, so where deer are coming off the mountain and they have that incline down to the road where you can see the tracks coming down or going up, right? And follow that trail and then use the tracking feature in the app and follow the trail. And then you'll be able to see that on the map after you're done and look at it and say, I just walked that deer trail. I walked this thing as far as I could for a mile and a half, and I got this big loop here. Now, what did you find in that process along that trail when you were doing that? What were some key terrain features you saw? What were things that you did? You see any rubs? Did you see any old scrapes? Did you see any fresh scrapes?
So, I saw a new slide this weekend.
Did you?
You know where the Brown Bridge is? Where that old guy always hunts?
Yes.
Go past that about 150 yards, coming down, going into there. It was like that wide, pure mud. I was like, are you serious? Check it out. I know you're going to be back up there soon.
I think I was there already.
You think you saw what I saw?
I think I was up in there trying to get my camera to link up.
It's a hell of a slide.
You're talking about the old man with the chair out there. Yeah, right down from there?
No, not the old man. Not a wild man. You know where the little brown bridge is?
What road are we talking about?
Our camp road.
Yeah?
You know where the little brown... It's just...
Okay, yes.
Go past that about 150 yards on the left, you'll see it.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
I did have a camera up in there this year.
I thought you had it down. Did you go up?
Up.
You went the opposite side. Okay, yeah. I didn't know that. All right.
Yep.
So, although you're seeing the same thing I was seeing, because it's not far from that. I was like, ooh, hey now. I got a little excited about that. But yeah.
Well, I did some scouting, and I'm really convinced that there's some deer, a nice buck that's running around, made it through the season. I have camera stuff on this buck, and I think he's bedding sometimes on a knob that's literally right on top of the road. And I think he's kind of checking the road out for entertainment during the day and all for security as well, because he can see where the threat is.
Yeah.
But it's all these little things. You can't get convinced that bedding is always going to be high. You can't be, because they will bed low at different times in real thick areas, especially marshy, thick swamp areas, which we've found over the years to be a hub for where deer go when they want security.
Yeah. So, I think back to turkey hunting now, not to do an extreme pivot back to that, but you know, there's a lot of time left, and my birthday falls on a Saturday this year, so mm-hmm. my wife says, "You sure you don't want to go hunting on your birthday? You know, go back up turkey hunting."
I'm going to be there.
Are you going to be there?
I took off, like I said, not this weekend,
yeah,
but the following week. I took off Thursday, Friday, and I'll be there Saturday, which is your birthday then.
Okay. Well, I might take off Friday and come up and hunt Friday, Saturday. Sunday, I have to work, and it's overtime. It's very good money. I'm not going to turn it down.
I'm testing a lot of gear, so I got to get out in the woods and test it. I don't like to get in front of a camera and right. do a review on a piece of gear without yeah. actually testing it.
Hey, there's no time like the present.
Yeah. So it frustrates some of the people that give me gear, but you know, yeah. I have to be as good as I can about it.
No, that's just it. You got to be thorough.
Yeah.
And you don't want to half-ass it. That's not fair to to the people who are sending.
Yeah. I think it's an ethics thing. I want to show some show that I'm honest.
If we do one more episode about ethical. Mom was getting mad a little bit there when we were talking about muscle memory. You guys said that like 56 times in the one episode.
But it's important.
It's important. It's, it is very, very important. So.
Well, Dan, I think we covered a lot today.
Yeah. 20th episode.
Yeah.
Cheers, man.
In the books.
Yeah.
Hey, we appreciate you guys being here, watching, listening, wherever you're at. Please, continue to follow us. We love having the questions. Please send in more questions. We really could use
that. It's kind of my favorite part.
Yeah, I love it. I love answering questions. But that's it, Dan.
All right, thanks.
Yep.
Thank you, everybody.
Yep. See you next time.